Yeah, j'ai pas le choix de vous expliquer le time, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Ma façon d'être, ma façon d'agir, ma façon de parler. Yeah. Yeah.
About 300 people attended the Forum Against Police Violence and Impunity, a weekend-long event that took place from January 29th to 31st in the Montreal neighborhood of Park Extension. Organizers adopted a strict no-police policy for the event, saying that people victimized by police violence should feel safe speaking out without fear of reprisal.
In order to maintain a safe space for participants, they also insisted on a strict media policy, banning all mainstream media from the event. The CKUT News Collective was there to document the forum. We reviewed hours of audio that was gathered, but for this feature, we only had time for selected highlights. We hope that, in the spirit of the event, it brings together the powerful and often poignant voices of those dealing with and organizing against police violence on the island of Montreal.
This report will also feature music from the artists involved in Hoodstock, a community event that marked the one-year anniversary of the killing of Freddy Villanueva, a youth of 18 who, unarmed, was shot by a Montreal police officer in August 2008. As organizers kicked off the Forum Against Police Violence and Impunity with a presentation called No Justice, No Peace, Why People Leave the Police, they explained the significance of hosting the forum in the neighborhood of Park Extension.
You may not know this, but we're very, very happy and excited that this event is actually happening right here in the Park X Community Center. Very excited and happy because the Park X Community Center is in Park X, a neighborhood that is quite symbolic when we talk about police violence, when we talk about police repression, when we talk about racial profiling, when we talk about youth being harassed and arrested on the streets. Park Extension is a neighborhood where that reality is a daily reality for folks in the neighborhood. So we felt it was really important to hold our event in a neighborhood that was obviously living that reality on a daily basis. So it's very important and very symbolic for us to be here. But we're really excited because we almost were not able to do that. After having secured a contract with the community center here, some pressures came from, you can imagine where, although we'll never really know where they came from, to the center to try to prevent the center from having the event here and not welcome this forum in the center. We fought back and we got the center back, and we're really, really happy that we're able to have a forum on issues of police violence and issues of police impunity right here in the Park X Community Center today. So it's a victory already that we're able to gather in this room and have this conversation tonight. So we just wanted to highlight that.
Organizers also stressed the importance of colonial history and its relationship to a racist legal system that puts Aboriginal people behind bars in numbers much higher than for whites, saying that the forum was taking place on stolen native land. They went on to explain the impetus for organizing the forum.
The killing of Freddy Villanueva, there's been a groundswell of movement and public realization that there are clearly extremely problematic issues within the police force in terms of questions of violence against youth, against racialized people, and the questions of impunity that come with that, not only at the level of the police force, but also at the level of government, the government level as well, whether it's municipal, provincial. And so that's one of the reasons we wanted to have this kind of forum, was really to be able to bring together people both who organize around police violence as well as folks who have dealt directly with that experience, to be able to share our experiences and then ultimately to come out of here with a way of with essentially strategies and continue to build on our campaigns to make our various campaigns stronger.
The first panel featured people who either went through police training or were part of a police force before leaving it to eventually become social justice activists and organizers, giving the audience an insider's view of the police. Presenters included Gabby Petticelli, Marcel Savigny, and Will Prosper. Facilitators Nazila Batachi and Samir Shaheen Hussein led the panel by asking questions to the presenters. While most of this panel discussion was in French, for this show we have selected English excerpts. For the full audio in French and English, please visit cktnews.wordpress.com. Here's Gabby Petticelli. Gabby completed the police technology program at John Abbott CJEP and the Nicolette Police Academy in the late 80s, but never worked as a police officer because she very quickly became critical of police culture. She later went on to write the book When Police Kill, Police Use of Force in Montreal and Toronto, published in 1998.
And some people do disagree, but I do believe that you have, you're part of the machine once you're there, and it's kind of hard to do your own thing. And that's manifested in many ways when killings happen. You don't see them standing up and going, I don't agree with that guy. They're all defending that guy. Do you know what I mean? Because even if they go home and don't agree with it, you know, the faces that we all stick together, and regardless of what happened, we're going to defend, you know? And that, so that's why that thought really scared me, and I said, I can't do this. So much power. I mean, these are people that are walking the streets with guns, and they're allowed to carry guns, and they're allowed to come into your life and determine what they deem right from wrong. And I do think that this kind of attitude in a gang type of thing where there's a bunch of them, I do think that, and oftentimes, even in the end, there's no accountability. I mean, we've seen it over and over again by cases of killings. I mean, I don't know if anybody remembers the Martin Swazel case in 1990, but it was like he was shot while he was on his knees with his hands handcuffed behind his back, in the middle of St. Catherine and St. Laurent with hundreds of witnesses, you know, and nothing came of that. So I think it's this whole idea that they do end up getting away with everything and that there's a general attitude that they can do what they like.
So we're still talking about impunity in a way. We're still talking about covering up, about defending, about protecting the cops, about the cops having sort of a preferential treatment in the courts of justice. So in the same theme of complicity and cover-ups and switching gears a little bit, I want to bring in the theme of media and corporate media and the role that the media play in covering up, in being complicit in cases of police violence and touching on some of the things that you write in your book, Abby, in particular. I just want to give an example that I think is a pretty striking one. It's an example surrounding the case of Mohamed Anas Benis, who some of you may know, was a 25-year-old youth who was killed on December 1st, 2005 at the corner of Côte des Neiges and Kent when he was going back home from morning prayer at 7:30 in the morning. He was shot twice from top down and killed on the spot by a police officer of Station 25. And 4 years later, there's still absolutely no information that's being given to the family. There's still no justice. In this case, like we mentioned earlier, there's many, many cases like this one. But one thing that was striking was the morning after Anas was shot. So on December 2nd, 2005, there was a few papers, La Presse, The Gazette, Le Journal de Montréal, that published articles about what had happened. And I just want to read the headlines for people to sort of get a sense of how media respond in those kinds of situations. So on December 2nd, 2005, La Presse titles, Étrange drame rue Kent, un passant poignard d'un agent avant d'être abattu lors d'une opération policière. Same day, The Gazette, knife attack on constable remains a mystery. Same day, Journal de Montréal, en début de soirée, les policiers affirmaient que l'agresseur n'était pas lié aux individus impliqués dans l'affaire de fraude. Pour l'instant, on croit qu'il s'agirait d'un geste gratuit commis par un déséquilibré. This knife that is mentioned in two headlines of two major papers here in Montreal, the supposed knife is the official story that the cops told everybody, including the media, saying that supposedly Anas would have attacked one of the cops with a knife and that they'd shot, as usual, in self-defense and killed him on the spot. This knife in question on December 2nd, 2005, when these articles were written, had not been displayed, had not been shown to the media, to the public, or to anybody. In fact, this knife has never undergone forensic examination. The injuries that Jean Bernier, the police officer who shot Anas in supposed self-defense, the injuries that he supposedly underwent were never made public. There's no pictures of him. There's no real sort of medical exam saying that he was injured. Supposedly he was knifed in the neck, yet there's absolutely no evidence of that. So that's the case now, but that was the case on December 2nd, yet we see clearly that the media, the message that the media is putting out in the public is exactly the same as the one that the cops are saying, and is exactly the same as the one that the Brotherhood is saying. And they're putting out these, again, hypotheses that Anas would have had mental health issues when there was never any question that Anas had mental health issues. That's completely made up. And this is what the media is saying to the population the day after Anas is shot.
Najla Benes is one of the sisters of Mohammed Anas Benes. She sat on a panel on Saturday entitled Never Again, Families Speak Out Against Police Killings and Impunity. She says, my brother, who would normally go out of his way to avoid stepping on ants on the sidewalk, could he have attacked a police officer? That doesn't fit at all with his character.
Donc pour mettre la lumière un peu sur ce qui s'est passé depuis sa mort, on demande une enquête publique. Et malheureusement, heureusement plutôt après.
So to find out what happened, we have demanded a public inquest into his death, and 3 years later, the coroner finally ordered such a public inquest. But the police fraternity made a plan to block it, insisting that there's no reason to have a public inquest and that it's just a waste of money.
Pour interdire, pour dire qu'il n'y a pas lieu d'avoir une enquête publique et que ce n'est que du gaspillage des fonds.
That was Najla Benes. Here's Bridget Tolley, an Algonquin woman from Kitigan, Zibi, Anishinaabe.
I am the daughter of Mrs. Gladys Tolley, who was fatally struck on Highway 105 by a patrol car driven by two Sûreté du Québec police officers on October 5, 2001 at approximately 11:30 p.m. Since that fateful night, I feel like I have been living in a bad dream, one I cannot wake from.
She explained to the audience that the inquiry into her mother's death was conducted by the brother of the officer who had been driving the patrol car that struck Gladys.
His brother made a report and said the first factor of my mom's death was negligence of a pedestrian, and the second factor was alcohol. This is the brother of the cop that just hit my mother. We feel strongly that these missteps warrant an independent investigation. Only an investigation fully independent of the police can satisfy that there is no bias in favor of the authorities and to ensure that the truth comes out.
That was Bridget Tolley.
Just pour recycler sick. Il paraît que mon territoire est toujours hostile. Montréal est mon vibe et ma ville. Grandi dans les secteurs chauds de cette ville. Gradué de la rue, je fais toujours mes business, mais deal. Fuck la police, eux ils complotent sur ton dos. Fuck la justice, elle est profite de ton dos.
So how can people defend themselves from police violence and harassment? Well, to start with, you need to know your rights.
Cops are going to ask you lots of questions. They're going to tell you lots of things, and you'll want to respond, you know? And even without thinking about it, some of your responses might incriminate you. They might just be helpful to the police in lots of reasons you can't understand. So if you can, remain silent.
That was Marique from the Collective Opposed to Police Brutality. She led workshops over the weekend about how to deal with the police.
Don't touch cops. Don't have any physical contact with them whatsoever. Touching a cop is a criminal offense. It's assault. Like, actually touching a cop, I'm not exaggerating, is a criminal offense. Assault. They may be very close, they may be touching you, so it's really hard, but I mean, you just have to think about sort of the consequences, and not just the legal consequences, also the fact that the cops are really stressed out. They may see that as a provocation. It's not that it would be your fault, but it may just start a really bad situation where there was, like, a physical altercation with the cop, and the cop has a taser, he has a baton.
In this workshop, they also reminded people that when police ask you to do something or provide information that you know is not required of you, you can just say no or ask why.
In Canada, you're actually not required to carry identification on you. Technically, legally, we're not in a police state, we're not in a military state, so we don't have to be able to identify ourselves at, like, checkpoints and whenever the cops stop us. You know, you can just say, I don't have to, I don't want to, or just even, do I have to? Under arrest, you're only required to give police your full name, your date of birth, And your current address?
Cops may react by backing off, realizing that this person knows what they're talking about and is not going to let me abuse my power. Or the cop's reaction may be, this person is really asking for it. They're questioning my authority, I don't like it, and I'm going to find a way to get back at them. In the forum, we were reminded that no situation is black and white, especially when dealing with the police.
Vous ramenez dans le temps pour quelques instants. Vous dévoilez des faits qu'on n'apprend pas forcément. J'entretiens une autre histoire, celle qu'on voit pas dans les cours. Amérindiens et les noirs, celle qu'il faut remettre à jour. Par où commencer, pour vous dire comment c'est. D'abord faut nuancer, l'histoire est romancée. Manipuler les décrets par les vainqueurs. Mais c'est parti dissimuler les hypocrites d'Apodia. Back in the day, sur de 1604, Champlain débarque avec à son bord black. Mathieu d'Acosta dit l'interprète. Il parle micmac, français, hollandais. 1629 arrive Olivier le Jeune, premier esclave répertorié dans la jeune ville de Québec. Au moins 10 000 esclaves au Canada jusqu'à l'abolition de ce droit en 1833. Yo, c'est fou, à force de fureté en masse, découvert que Lionel Groux prenait la pureté des races. C'est la même pour Garneau, FX Garneau. Québec, History X, ils ont passé du tableau. Mais pourtant, il y avait des hommes d'affaires noires. On était dans les régiments, d'autres étaient croire du bois, mais aussi des aubergistes. Et ils veulent faire croire que les noirs sont d'ici depuis les années 70. 1779, point du sable Jean-Baptiste. Métis antillère, fondeur, poste de traite en Illinois. Nowadays, on l'appelle Chicago. Black francophone à fond des Chicago. Jackie Robinson, Olivier Jones, Oscar Peterson. La liste est longue, mais pas tant que ça. Trop d'héros oubliés qui ont contribué à notre passé. Mais peu veulent le souligner.
I'm not controversial, I'm just speaking the facts. I think I speak with your weak mind lacks. I'm not controversial, I'm just speaking the facts.
Au 19e siècle, c'est pas du tout fini. Ils ont envoyé les Chinois faire le chemin de fer de tout le pays. Détonateurs vivants, ils envoyaient creuser la roche avec la nitroglycérine. Ça sautait à leur approche. Le pâté chinois, ça vient de là. Bœuf, maïs et patates, tout ce qu'on trouve dans le West Side. À toi et moi, ça a rien d'oriental. C'est une mixture qu'on leur donnait pour les nourrir en tas. Maintenant, les Indians, oh, les Indians, man. Ils l'ont eu bad, les Indians. Genocide à grande échelle, à trop grande échelle. La mémoire des Amériques est à jamais entachée. Premières armes bactériologiques, on leur donnait des couvertures, un bibi de variole. Tu vois la suite, un choc microbiologique et viol culturel. Être vu un étranger sur sa propre parcelle de terre ancestrale, c'est l'ère industrielle qui fait qu'encore 21e siècle, l'âme des ancêtrales parle de viol, d'école et d'alcool dans les fioles. Le haut taux de suicide démontre fucking ras-le-bol. Dans les réserves, je comprends qu'il y en a qui a s'attaqué au gouvernement, comme dans le temps qu'il allait s'attaquer.
I'm not controversial, I'm just speaking the facts. I think I speak with your weak mind lacks. I'm not controversial, I'm just speaking the facts. Wait, you're up, out of your brainwashed state.
On Sunday, at a panel called The Gender of Police Violence, we heard about how sex workers are treated as second-class citizens in a legal system that allows violence against sex workers to go unchecked.
Here is Ana Louise Crego, who coordinates Outreach for Stella, a group run by and for sex workers, and fights to decriminalize their lifestyles.
In the court process, women are attacked, told, you're just a whore, you wanted it, you can't say no, prostitutes can't get raped. And so at a number of the trials this year, we stood outside and asked for support of other people to stand outside and let the women know that we're outside, and we believe them.
Also at the gender violence panel, members of the Prisoner Correspondence Project brought news from behind prison walls, where guards have the power to enforce gender norms on an isolated population.
They talked about how their project seeks to break this isolation through the Pen Pal program.
The idea that it is a form of violence to say you're a trans woman, I'm not going to house you properly, I'm not going to give you access to hormones, you can't have access to surgery. And Amazon and other people work in informal ways to actually intervene with prison policy and to change those procedures. So she has gotten trans women access to hormones, access to surgery. She smuggles in condoms. She does informal sex ed work around harm reduction and hep C reduction and HIV AIDS education. Also builds community right between the trans women in the prison that she's in, creating scenes and literature and like a sense of solidarity between people. And I think that as a project, we're working really hard to support these already existing communities as a form of breaking isolation to break violence.
Jessica Yee, founder and executive director of the Native Youth Sexual Health Network, talked about the violence of a law enforcement system rooted in colonialism.
The recognition of the laws that police are supposed to uphold and justice systems as
colonial imposed laws. I think lends itself to an interesting discussion about the types of justice that we want to seek. A lot of my friends who are First Nation lawyers, I always encourage them to continue because I always think it's a good idea to beat them with their own system. If you want to learn how to undo or decolonize or fight back, I think for us as Aboriginal people, we need to know the Indian Act inside and out, but we also need to know that so long as we're still living in this colonized imposed state, that we are going to need allyship and support and all peoples as part of this struggle.
That was Jessica Yee.
C'est le slang de Montréal, c'est comme ça qu'on parle. Ça varie en chaque secteur, c'est comme ça qu'on jase. Oui, je te donne mon lexique, c'est toi pour l'artiste. Ne le dérange pas pendant l'exercice. C'est le slang de Montréal, c'est comme ça qu'on parle. Ça varie en chaque secteur, c'est comme ça qu'on jase. Oui, je te donne mon lexique, c'est toi pour l'artiste. Ne le dérange pas pendant l'exercice. Avant veut dire regarde ailleurs, t'es chauffé, j'te bagarreur. Lyon, j'check, veut dire à tout à l'heure. Un gros spliff, ça bat. Mon texte, un rap. Un homme, mais c'est un homme. C'est un masque, on yes. La vie veut dire les coches. Une bouse, une pute. Si j'parle de Bunda, c'est qu'elle a un cul. Stimulant, c'est du beat. Faire du bruit, c'est une crise. Yo, j'y t'es enfant. Veut dire à tout, oui. Un crosseur, fuck yeah. Bouge pas, t'es une fuck yeah. Si j'dis que ça reste en nous, donc c'est notre secret. Si tu as su, t'es ouais, jusqu'au rejet. Qu'est-ce que toujours tu copes? Yo t'es juste un gringet. Tu copes c'est l'argent. Un smack ça va. C'est pas juste freestyle qui démonte tes talents. La carrière est domicile. La carrière automobile. Le partner s'est fait descendre. Y'a eu un homicide. C'est le slang de Montréal. C'est comme ça qu'on parle. Ça varie en chaque secteur. C'est comme ça qu'on jase. Oui, j'te donne mon lexique. C'est toi pour l'artiste. Ne me dérange pas pendant l'exercice.